We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Hey everybody, welcome into the OBR Film Breakdown. It's your Thursday, April 4th edition. Jake and Andrew are here with you, as always. We hope you're well. Thanks for joining us. We have a lot to talk about today. There was a huge move in the NFL. If you listened to yesterday's pod, which I would encourage you to do so if you missed it, we did power rankings of the entire AFC, obviously ahead of what we think teams will do in the draft. Sometimes some feeling about what teams are going to do in the draft kind of creeps into your thought process there a little bit, especially for the teams at the bottom of the AFC, but I think it's really good for the perspective of where the conference is right now. Unfortunately, we did that. And this is one of the rare times, Andrew, I'll tell you, my dad calls me all the time. He called me today. I was in the store with my youngest kid who's, you've seen The Incredibles. Maybe you stumbled upon that in your life. Like Jack, the youngest little kid, he's an absolute monster right now. He won't sit in the cart. I can't do anything. And you like, I'm going on a tangent here, folks, but you ever go to the grocery store knowing, like I'm going in knowing I need very specific things.
Totally. That's like, how I, like that's how I shop. Vinegar,
like stuff that is very specific to this fried rice that I want to make.
That's right.
And it is so challenging to find those things in a grocery store that you're not familiar with. Even if it's like super specific things in a place you've been a lot, finding the right minced garlic you're looking for or whatever else is so challenging. And I have this little baby, 1.5-year-old, who just will not sit still once out of the cart. Doesn't want what I'm giving him, tried everything. So like that was a 2-hour sweat attack of just like, this cannot end fast enough. It was one of the few times. So getting to the long point here is Stephon Diggs gets traded. My dad calls me. He's like, you saw that trade, right? And I'm like, what are you talking about? You see some Bleacher Report notification that is like a fake trade or something? No, there was a really big trade. And we're ranking Buffalo. Now you're Buffalo fourth. I think you had them maybe yesterday. It looks a little better than where I had them. Up at second.
When you do power rankings, a lot of the time you're thinking about what's coming next. And I thought that the feeling from the Bills was that they wanted to kind of take a step back. And I there had been some speculation about a Diggs trade earlier in the offseason, but then there'd also been quite a few people kind of pretty vocally saying that it wasn't going to happen. And it ends up happening for not that much return. And it just kind of really shows you, I think, where the Bills feel like they are, which is needing to take a step back, clear some of these contracts off of their roster so that they're not stuck in this sort of compromised cap situation for multiple years. You know, I did see the one criticism of the move being essentially, if you're going to do this, why don't you eat, you know, take your medicine with Von Miller this year too, get him off the books for future years and really kind of, you know, this year's a down year and then you're ready to go for next year. I think that's a valid question because this sort of a move, the lack of return that they got, not even getting a pick in this year's draft, so ending up with a pick in next year's draft, tells you that they are taking, they have to be. They lost a bunch in free agency. They, practically speaking, must be taking a step back this year. And so, and that is in direct contrast to what the Texans are doing, which is saying, we've got as wide open a window as any team in the NFL right now because we are in year two, and CJ Stroud was a top 8 quarterback his rookie year.
Right.
So they've got four more affordable years of him. And I have been lukewarm on Nick Caserio and the job that he's done down there. There's been some stuff that has felt a little bit like putting Band-Aids on a situation or whatever. But I think this is the sort of thing that I saw some people thinking that this didn't really move the needle, that this wasn't that big of a deal as a trade. I don't think you can overstate the impact that a veteran wide receiver like Stephon Diggs can have on a young group of wide receivers that are very talented, but none of them have what Diggs has, which is that FU energy where he he takes over the room. He becomes the leader of that offense, arguably, right there with Stroud. And I think it's a great move for the Texans.
It's a similar thing to last year where everybody pretended DeAndre Hopkins couldn't play anymore. And like, it's just not the case. These guys can still play. I mean, you have to remember the Bills offense was mired by a whole bunch of dysfunction. I mean, look at their coordinator change midseason. Josh Allen had a really rough start to the year in terms of who he traditionally is. So like, I think that the funniest thing about today for me, and I wanted to say it, but I decided not to, is like, we're just going to pretend Stephon Diggs doesn't have a couple really good seasons left in him in the right environment, like a domed environment, like all that stuff. Okay, we're going to do that because I understand that they wanted him off the books. They're eating a historic cap hit of $30 million for like the biggest non-quarterback cap hit we've ever seen. I get it. That's going to happen as the salary cap keeps going up and extensions get more crazy over time. But like the pretending that the guy can't play anymore to me was really, really funny in the process of evaluating this whole trade, which again, I think that on like first glance, you're like, they gave him away. And they did in a sense, Andrew, because they're taking a prime Josh Allen season saying we would rather have you off the team, eat your $30 million and give up two picks in the immediate draft. Now for the Bills, I also think that they did okay here because if someone came up to us, Andrew, and said you could have a fourth and a sixth for Greg Newsome this year or a second next year, not one-to-one here, but because of the contract and because of the age and the value of the position, it could happen that way. I probably would say I'll take the two next year. So I'm just getting it like, I think the Bills did okay, but it's also fair to be critical of them saying in the prime of Josh Allen, we're giving up, like now our best receivers are Khalil Shakir and you know, whoever else. I mean, I think that they Curtis Samuel, maybe they signed. I mean, it's a bad group. Yeah. It's a bad group. So yeah, they could obviously select a couple guys, but those are rookies and guys don't come in, especially non top of the first round guys, unless you strike the, you know, Justin Jefferson at 18 miracle. But like, I just think there's give and take with this trade that is a little bit of like, I understand why the Bills did it because they're getting something of, I consider it, I mean, they're getting the Vikings second round pick next year. We think that's probably going to be a top 45-ish pick. I can see why they'd be drawn to doing that and making that move in that moment because you're not getting that for Diggs when he's 31 going on 32 next year. So I get it, but it's also like a real punt this like vibe of we're punting on the season in terms of what we're expecting. Could they have a great year? Could it work out and the draft picks are great and Josh plays better than ever? Sure, but it's not the right message, I would say. And I think a lot of Bills people that I follow are kind of, you know, echoing that.
Yeah. I think you'd have to be, you'd be shocked if they took a step forward with the losses on defense of veteran safeties. We talked about that yesterday. And you combine that with the loss of probably the most important player on the offense besides Josh Allen, right? Like, and I think, you know, there's some talk about Stephon Diggs being a little bit of a malcontent or whatever. Like the reality is that's just wide receivers, right? Like the reality is every one of the top 30 wide receivers in the league, except for Amari Cooper, won't shut up. That's just the position. And so like, I mean, Larry Fitzgerald was another famous example to the opposite, Calvin Johnson, but you can count those guys on one hand. For the most part, the skill set that it takes to play wide receiver engenders a level of self-confidence and never knowing when to shut up that is specific to the position. There's that great tweet, Jake, that circulates every once in a while. It's so like good. What every position always says in a tweet, right?
And I think I could rattle it off for you real quick. Quarterback tweet is all glory to God, love my teammates. Running back tweet is keep grinding. Tight end tweet is derp.
Yep.
And then the wide receiver tweet is like, you know, the enemy carries a sword. Speak softly, but right, the enemy carries right, a exactly. sword or something like a knife. Or exactly. It's so true because that's how they – and like to your point, what you're making I think really well here is they have also seen their idols do this. They love exactly. CEO. They loved right. Ocho.
It's how
CEO.
You live. Yeah, it's how you make your money.
It's the life they think they have to live.
Yes. So. And the important point to me is if you produce on the field, that's all that matters, right? Like – the bottom line in the NFL for 30 years with this stuff has been you can be any sort of nut job you want to be off the field. Just put up the numbers.
And that's a little bit of what, if you remember, I think it's Tyler Dunn wrote that big write-up on the Bills. And a big thing he wrote about in that write-up that tied into Diggs was specifically like, McDermott has this whole thing about being there at OTAs and doing these things and having like a finger on the pulse of everything. And Diggs is like, not that guy. He's going to do his thing. He's going to show up. He's going to be prepared. He's going to be ready to go. And when you question him, you're questioning how much he has integrity of himself, like how much he believes to bet on himself to do the things he needs to do to be prepared. So I understand that side of it. I understand why a coach would want to have everybody under their roof. But some of these guys who are your sports cars are guys that do the work outside and they're ready to go. They show up and know what to do when it matters. And I would imagine that's extremely difficult for a coach to manage, but also you have to know when you have one. And it seems to me like the Bills didn't do the best job of navigating that, which again is not easy. And again, I don't want to sit here and say like Amari Cooper is a better person than these guys. That's not what I'm saying. But as far as when you find one of these low maintenance types like Amari Cooper, that's like striking gold. That's what's amazing to me about Dallas and Vegas, like passing on him and moving, like he is so show up, do his work. He's just the right type of player at the position that I think can filter some of the guidance, the teaching to how to handle your business to these other guys, where you can see some of those who grew up idling some of those guys who like to stand out, you know, being like, okay, I mean, this seems like Amari's route to doing this is pretty efficient too. So I just, it's a big draw to him. And it's like, clear to me why the Browns love him and they might extend him for this exact reason. It is just so it's such a better vibe for your team when you find that. But listen, there's nothing wrong with these cats who are quoting Shakespeare during the summer months but showing up and giving you 1500 burgers through the year. So like there's a balancing act you have to have here.
Exactly. Yeah, I want to absolutely echo what you said. We're not saying that some of these guys are bad guys, some of these guys are good guys. It's a personality thing. I think it takes a level of self-confidence to go one-on-one with the best defenders in the NFL, to go over the middle into double coverage and know that you're going to be the guy that comes down with the ball. I don't think that there's anything wrong with any of this. My point is that's part of what it takes to have one of those guys often is putting up with that, is finding a way. I don't even want to say putting up with. I want to say finding a way to channel that into better performances on the field. Right. It's what the Browns struggled to do with Odell Beckham for 3 years, right?
That's exactly. The Browns could not navigate those waters. Yeah. Maybe Kevin learned from it, but that first run through, it didn't go well.
Right. He would do it differently this time. The next time he gets a chance, well, and actually he probably does right now because Jerry Jeudy is, I think, a little bit in that mold. Talking about Diggs, he was the player that unlocked this version of Josh Allen. Right, that didn't exist before that trade with the Vikings. And so if I'm a Bills fan, my number one fear is, what is our quarterback now? You want to believe that he has transcended that at this point. Certainly the Bills expect that. They're paying him like that. But I also think, thinking about the Browns side of things, Deshaun Watson's best years were with DeAndre Hopkins. And now he was also good in 2020 when he didn't have Hopkins, but the often quarterbacks benefit from having a really strong symbiotic relationship with one wide receiver. I think the Bengals with Burrow and Chase, right? That transmitted from college to the pros. Like, this is not an accident. And so I think that would be my biggest concern if I'm a Bills fan. You can talk about the dead money. You can talk about whatever. My question is, what happens to Josh Allen now? If you draft, say, Brian Thomas, and it's Brian Thomas, Khalil Shakir, and Curtis Samuel, when the chips are down on a 3rd and 13, who is Josh Allen looking at? Dalton Kincaid? I mean, right. Who's his guy?
That's the risk they're running. And it feels like if Josh Allen wanted it bad enough, he could have blocked it. I mean, I feel like he storms in there, says, I heard about this trade. We're not moving him. I need him. Could have been stopped. I think those two's relationship wore through, whatever route that was going to travel. It appears to have traveled wherever it was going to go. And hopefully there's a recognition from both sides that Josh needed whatever he got from Diggs, he needed it. And then maybe Josh can still do it without him. I don't know. That's what we're going to figure out. I think just presuming that losing a player like Diggs and the sort of like, you know, magnetism that he brings to an offense to draw coverage in, help other players out, acting like you can just guaranteed replace that, to me, is something I think you should be careful about. And then also, you know, thinking that life can't go on without a big name receiver is also something you got to be careful about. It's going to be really interesting to see how it plays out. I mean, the Bills are taking a risk. They're trying to cash in probably a year early on him. And yeah, we'll see. I'm excited to see, because again, the thing that's irking me more than anything else is like the pretending that Diggs still can't play. Like, I think that he's going to have a couple good years and the Texans have flexibility in that contract. And they really are showing you precisely how you handle a rookie deal to maximize the quarterback rookie situation and putting the weapons around him. So,
We talk about a lot from the Buffalo perspective and the risk that they're taking. I don't see a lot of risk from the Texans side because of the situation where you are, the amount of money that they still have, and the fact that most of the bad part of the contract is actually still in Buffalo. So I think it probably feels like a pretty good deal for the Texans. And then the question just becomes, you know, is that, like we kind of touched on this yesterday, is that offense as good as it looked like it was? They finished really strongly, right? And then obviously what they did against the Browns in the wild card game, is that what this offense is? Is that the baseline? I thought, you know, Kevin Cole made this point on Twitter today, like, you don't want to peg your expectations for game in, game out where they were at the end of the season last year because they were hot. And so I think that that's a good reminder, but the way you guard against that is you add players that make a difference and change the way that teams defend you, which is exactly what they did. So maybe that evens out and they still do continue to be.
Yeah.
If they operate at that level for a full season, like I said on yesterday's show, I think they could be a 13-14 win team. I really do.
It's a great point about, you know, sort of recreating your identity a little bit, creating different challenges for defenses where, you know, now we have to worry about Nico and Stephon on top of Schultz and all these other weapons, kind of layering that into, like, you can't focus too much on CJ. Yeah, it's going to be fascinating. I think they're doing exactly what, like, if you give an NFL team a handbook of, like, you have a great young quarterback, here's how you go about it. They're doing it. I have them at 3. I'd probably bump them up to 2 now. But it's just a fun topic to go into because every NFL team at some point deals with this situation, a wide receiver, and you just have to find a way to navigate it. So it's always an interesting topic to sort of go into a little bit.
Yeah, one last thing on this trade from a league-wide perspective, and I think it does impact the Browns a little bit. It just really kind of, I think, reinforces that the trade value for these players is not sometimes where we think it is going to be. And we saw how cheaply the Browns were able to acquire Jerry Jeudy. I know that Diggs is older and has this contract, and so that maybe changes things a little bit. But when you start to talk about some of the other veteran wide receivers that are looking for a new deal or maybe got a new deal and are not, you know, are not earning it, and their availability in trade, I think from a Browns perspective, I know that there's been some talk about extending Cooper. I would be awfully tempted if I was Andrew Berry to try and hold my fire, hold on here and see if either around the draft this year or going into next offseason, there was a trade available for one of these players that's about to hit free agency that needs an extension. There's like we've gone through the list a few times. There's like a dozen wide receivers next year that are going to need big extensions. I think history is telling us not every team is going to want to pay their very expensive wide receiver. Some of these teams are going to say, we'll draft another guy. And so if we can get a second round pick for Brandon Ayuk, we'd rather do that than pay him $30 million a year. And I think if that's the case, I'm picking that name out of a hat, but it can apply to like a dozen different situations around the NFL. I would be tempted if I was Andrew Berry to see if I can find one of those true number one guys in a trade and then sign them to an extension rather than one, trying to find it in the draft, or extending Cooper far, far beyond, you know, kind of where his the end of his career is going.
Yeah, patience might pay off there. So it's a good point. At the minimum, we know they're interested in extending that relationship, but it gets a little tricky with, you know, guys like Keenan Allen, the age where you're paying them hefty contracts and they're starting to wear down. So you have to guard against being on the wrong side of those decisions. And I think you're making a good point about sort of where that market could be a year from now, and maybe not forcing yourself into, like, you know, imagine you're sitting here and Brandon Ayuk is really a guy somebody wants to move, or,
right,
you know, plethora of other names out there that could be moved in these scenarios. And you're like, man, we already extended.
Because if you sign Cooper with the Jeudy contract, the door is really closed at that point. Those are your guys. Those are your two guys. So,
right. Yeah, I'm with you. Okay, let's take a break. When we get back from break, we're going to do a couple of true or false draft questions that we think early on in this process. We're still early. I mean, it's still a month away, that we think are worth having a conversation about, you know, seeing if these little sort of talking points are true. So we'll be right back, and a quick word from our sponsors.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/BlueWire. Just go to Indeed.com/BlueWire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/BlueWire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
We at the OBR are proud to once again be sponsored by Game Time Ticket Application. It is one of the best on the market, where buying tickets to your favorite events shouldn't feel stressful. And they don't feel stressful. It's a quick and easy process to buy tickets for sports, music, comedy, anything you want for any event near you. Game Time has you covered. They have killer deals all throughout the process, including last minute tickets with the best price guarantee. You can stop stressing over the availability and price of those tickets and just start looking forward to your event. I know that's how it was for us. My wife really wanted some Justin Timberlake concerts for her birthday. I went to Game Time. Easy process. Lets you look at the seating map, figure out where you can sit, have the view from the seats. They showed some flash deals that were available to get the best price, and that price was guaranteed even for event cancellation, job loss protection, all the above. Great seats for the concert. Made me a hero in the household. I'm telling you guys, Game Time is the place for the last minute ticket deals, or even if you're planning way out in advance, they have deals going on all the time. Like I said, those exclusive flash deals for any game you care about, concert you care about, theater experience, whatever. You have that Game Time guarantee, which means you'll get that assurance for the best price available for those tickets. If you find a better seat, better price for less, they'll credit you 110% of the difference there, guys. That's important. So grab your Game Time tickets today. Download the Game Time app, create an account, use the code OBR for $20 off your first purchase. Terms apply. Again, create an account, redeem the code OBR for $20 off. Download that Game Time app today, or go to gametime.co. to take advantage of the last minute tickets you can find at the lowest price guaranteed. Okay, we're going to play like a true or false, Andrew. There's a pretty big media name, Field Yates, put out a mock draft today. We're going to be paying close attention to the bigger names in their mock drafts as they extend into round two and three, as these guys kind of start to expand a little bit more beyond just round one mock draft. So the big question I think we're sitting here asking ourselves is, are the Browns going to move out of the second round for the third straight year? I think we're asking ourselves this question because, you know, sort of deep down, we always think they will, but the back half of this draft is noted as a shallow draft. So you find yourself saying, what's the point maybe in moving down, and they haven't selected somebody in the second round for a couple years? Is this the year? So the true or false question, this is the year statement you have to kind of battle here is this is the year that the Browns stay in the second round and make a selection at 54. I can't call it a premium pick, but it's a pretty good pick.
I think I'm going to say false because I think that they probably would rather, to your point from before, I think they would rather probably rather have a second round pick in next year's draft. And I think that there's a chance that one of the players that they think is worth the pick at 54 is available. But I think if those players are not there, then it's going to come time to pull the ripcord and get out of the second round. And I think the way that you do that is you trade down into like probably the back half of the third round and try and pick up a second round pick next year. I think that trade value wise works out pretty well. And it allows you to still add a player this year, but also add another second round pick next year. So you're really, now you're kind of sitting on something for next year with a first and 2 seconds.
I'm sort of curious. It has been some like relatively quality pieces to yield a second round pick. We saw, you know, the Vikings situation to come up and get pick 23 cost a second round pick. And like the Diggs trades a future second. I don't know that teams are just ready to move future twos the way we think they are. I'm just going to question that a little bit. So I'm going to say that they sit at 54 and make a choice just because, again, I think that there's sort of a consensus around the league that like this draft doesn't get very deep beyond pick maybe 75. And there's some concern about that. And like moving off of next year's draft, which what folks who are covering this for a living say is that it's supposed to be a better draft than from a depth standpoint. I could see it being a little more difficult than it has been in recent years. And really, we haven't seen the Browns make a move in these drafts for a future meaningful pick. They've slid back in the current draft. So I think they'll if they're presented with that proposition, Andrew, they would take it. I don't think they're going to get that proposition, and I don't know that they're going to get somebody from their end calling and offering it that agrees to it. But I certainly could see why they would.
No, I think that's a fair point. I think that's the opposite side of this argument is what the Browns might want to do is not necessarily available to them. And so then you've got to sit there and make a selection because nothing that you've been offered comes even close to fair market value for the pick. So I see that side of it. And I do think, you know, they're obviously doing their due diligence about offensive tackles that would be available at 54. I think that's probably the pick that makes the most sense there in terms of addressing a future need. And I know we'll talk about that in a second, but I think what I wouldn't want to see, Jake, is say Suamataya and Amadegaji are both gone by 54. Do you force like a Patrick Paul? Do you, you know, yeah. I mean, if that's where it starts to get, you know, if that guy's not there, I don't know, maybe then they try and drop down like 10 picks and pick up something and just do a smaller move down just to try and make themselves feel better about not forcing a pick there. I think it's interesting. I think because this is the third year of this where they're sitting further back in the draft, it's a day and a half, really, that you have to just kind of like speculate pretty much nonstop about how this goes. And then you watch the first night, you see the names that are still left on the board, and then you spend the 20 or 18 hours from the end of the first round to the beginning of the second round comparing those lists and thinking about who the Browns might be able to have sit on the clock for another 20 picks, right? And then they trade out. So it's so hard to predict what's going to happen when the pick is 54, because it's just, this is an obvious point, but it's so far away from being reality because 53 other players have to come off the board. There'll probably be a dozen trades by then, all this other stuff. It's just a different world. And so it's hard to predict because it's hard to imagine what that world's going to look like.
I feel very certain they're not going to do anything that moves them out of that pick before the draft, the way we saw them last year.
I agree with that. Adjusting 100%. Out. Yeah.
They want to see if the guy they want is there and if the guy they don't want and they can move down in that current draft. I think that is a very real possibility. But I like them having the flexibility in place here to like, let's get to 54, see what the board looks like. Do we like our guys? If not, we'll explore our options. I just don't think that there's going to be a wide range of opportunities there that there have been in previous drafts. So I'm curious, at least not from the appealing standpoint of like, oh, we picked up, you know, one pick 175 to move back six spots or something. Like, it's like, you know, pick 175. I'd rather just take your guy because that's not a great pick in this draft. So that's where I sort of lean and why I went with that in the first point. To the second question here, which is if they do go offensive tackle, like you mentioned, two recent offensive tackle visits. We saw one tonight with Kingsley. They're having these guys in. There's a clear interest. That makes four tackles if they make that choice, if their guy's sitting there. And I think the idea is they draft one and sort of give him a redshirt year. And I don't know that that will be the case, Andrew. I know that last year the situation sort of forced DeJuan Jones to play because of injuries. I'm not even sure that, like, if a guy they like is there at 54, they bring him in, it takes an injury for him to get on the field. If Jack Conklin isn't the same guy, he's your swing tackle. You've already paid him. You got to deal with it for a year. He's your backup swing tackle. If Jedrick Wills isn't performing, whether through camp, preseason, regular season beginning, they have somebody they could say, hey, man, we don't have anything tied to Jed in the future. We're going to go ahead and put Kingsley at left tackle and give Jed chances to play other positions, and we can flirt with seeing if he could play guard. Like, we're just going to do whatever we can to see if there's a spot for this guy. I just think that there's an idea that if they draft a tackle, they're like redshirting this player and he won't play unless injuries happen. And I think the way I would go about that sort of statement, that those guys won't play if they take a tackle at 54, is saying false. I think they're going to give that player, with a new offensive line coach and new eyeballs on the entire construction of the offense, a chance to win a job. Because I don't think, like, they've already made their bed with those two contracts, Jed and Conklin. Like, they have already, you know, the situations have played out. Like, they're gonna have to fulfill those roles for those guys. And I think they're looking to the future here. And if one of those youngsters is better, they're going to play. I just do. I just think that if they like him enough and they comes in and it's a new O-line coach, a new process of play calling and everything, they have a chance to play. I don't think it's an auto sit situation is what I'm saying, Andrew.
I think that's very fair, because it's based in the reality that you articulated really well, which is Conklin and Wills are on this roster for this year and then they're not. Like, I don't think there's much, unless Jack Conklin has sort of supernatural healing abilities and comes back and plays at a Pro Bowl level, I don't think he's on the roster next year. Unless Jed Wills turns his entire career around, I don't think he's on the roster next year. So and that's the thinking behind taking a tackle at 54, is that in 2025, you will need a tackle because you'll only have DeJuan Jones. So from that perspective, if what's best for the team in 24 is to play the young guys, that actually helps your position in 25, because you're not putting a guy into the fire for the first time and finding out if they can play for the first time after they've been on the team for a year. So I think it makes a lot of sense in terms of the Jed Wills, the Jack Conklin situations are unfortunately sunk costs for this organization. They've got $30 million tied up in two players that they can't move that money. They don't want to move those players, but they also might not play those players.
I think that's the same for most of these guys on the offense this year. I'd be looking at, if I was Elijah Moore, if I was any of these guys on the fringe, David Bell.
I think it's true for Jerome Ford.
Right, yep. Jerome Ford. Mm-hmm. The same thing with tight end with Jordan Akins. Like, this is a completely new thought process and completely new eyeballs evaluating who's going to play and who deserves to play, who deserves targets. You know, we know that Jerry Judy's going to get targets, and we know that Coop will, but how the rest of those guys fit in, like, this is a chance to win over. And I understand Kevin's running the offense. It's not you starting from scratch here, but a chance to win over these people is real. And, like, especially, you know, Callahan, I think we could agree, is pretty set in his ways. His guys were going to play, whereas Dickerson is like, hey, I'm evaluating all of these guys for the first time. If Jed doesn't want to give effort and doesn't want to play through the whistle, I have no attachment to him, and neither does the franchise moving forward. He can sit. He can be a sixth, seventh offensive lineman for us if he doesn't want to do it the way we teach him. Whereas when Callahan had him, they had to play him. Have to play him. 10th pick overall, a lot of money invested, develop him. How Jed plays without any promise of what his NFL future looks like, where he could be on like a one-year, $4 million deal the next year and then be washed out of the league, is one of the most intriguing parts of the upcoming season for me. Because I know Jack would handle the role professionally. If they said, hey, man, you're a six tackle, come in unbalanced scenarios and be ready to play, someone goes down, good, got it, I'll do it. He's a veteran. Jedrick Wills is different. Coddled, right? Been told everything he's going to get. And listen, good player, could be great, been very vocal about this, but the attitude part of things for him have always been an issue. And you get new coaches, you get less affiliation, they have less history with you. Doesn't always work out that way, buddy.
Yeah, I think that's, I agree. It is absolutely at the top of the list of questions for this season is how he approaches it. Because as much as we're talking about replacing him, I do also still think that the Browns probably hope that he can turn it around.
Hell yeah, they do.
Because that still is their straightest path to having a left tackle, right tackle combo for the next few years is signing Wills to a middle market starter deal. At left and having DeJuan Jones at right. That's a, and that, and then whoever, if they did draft somebody at 54, that player would be the swing tackle. And that would be, they'd be thrilled with that. So there's still a path to him, but it requires him doing exactly what you said he's going to struggle to do, which is earning that spot. So it, like you said, it's a big unknown question. The other question is, I feel like if this was going to happen, Jake, there would have been some indication of it by now. Is there any inkling from the Browns that they maybe want to see what DeJuan Jones can do at left tackle?
I think all of that stuff is on the table, Andrew. I can't wait to get to OTAs and like, oh, is that who I think it is, a left tackle? Is that who I think it is, a right tackle? This is the year you can rewrite your thought process on these guys. I couldn't, like, we're talking about rewriting how they approach the scheme stuff. They can rewrite how they approach personnel here with guys in-house, and I'm excited to see if they'll do that because they should be, in this year, flirting with the best outcome. Like, hey, Jed, would you be more comfortable playing on the right side? This is a different O-line coach. Different conversation. Yeah, I probably would. DeJuan, do you think you could try left tackle for us during OTAs in you know, mini camp? Yeah, we can give that a run. Like, they should be doing, if they don't do that, I'll be disappointed. I really think they should be flirting with what makes these guys the most comfortable. And maybe, again, behind closed doors, Jed has said, I don't want to play right tackle. It could happen, could possibly be there. But I just think that this is a situation more than ever that we could see some of those like, oh, this guy's doing that. That guy's doing that. That's different than what they've done before. Because they were 4 years deep with the same coaching staff offensively. You get in very, very much habitual sort of stuff.
Well, and it's interesting too, Jake, because this there's part of this that kind of reminds me of the conversation we had last year, where it felt obvious to us that there were certain things they needed to do schematically with the offense to change, and we expected to see them, and then we didn't. And I wonder, I agree with you 100% that this is that opportunity to reevaluate some players that have been on the roster for a few years with a lot of new offensive coaches looking at them. But the general manager and the head coach being the same, what level of latitude do the coaches underneath them have to question those roles, reevaluate those players in different scenarios? And it's not that I want to be negative about this. I want to be a little bit guarded here, a little bit, maybe even cynical, and say, I want to see it, right? Like, I agree with you. It makes all the sense in the world that they should do it. I don't want to go so far as to expect it, because we were really surprised last year that they didn't have a shotgun run game set up. And
yeah,
that took us off guard because it seems so obvious and necessary. And I would describe the sort of tinkering with the offensive line positions as a similar, really just the tackles, as similarly obvious and necessary. But I also think there's a chance, just because of the way that this organization has been under these leaders, the general manager and the head coach, that they decide not to make that change. And they kind of just ride with things the way that they are. So it's something I'm hopeful to see it in OTAs and minicamp.
Right. The stubborn nature of who they collectively were on offense last year was something we underestimated, myself particularly. I am more optimistic is the way to say it because of the complete and wholesale changes to guys underneath Kevin. But to your point, that is fair. It doesn't mean that it's a lock and you should be predicting it. We should be predicting it because you are still talking about two of the guys who have been committed to a certain path. Maybe not Andrew. Andrew's just providing the ammunition. That's a little more Kevin, but it'll just be interesting to see, like, did Callahan have all say on the offensive line? Like, his decisions was the only thing that mattered. We'll figure it out, but I'm optimistic because of just the implementation of so many new people. And I have to think Kevin is giving them a chance to evaluate their guys. I really do, just by virtue of how Kevin has been as a person and a coach. I have to think he's going to do that. Does that lead to big changes such as Jed going to the right side, Dwan going left, and so on and so forth? No, maybe not, but I would love to see him flirt with it, and I don't think there's a better opportunity to do so than right now when everyone's fresh.
I agree wholeheartedly with all of that, and I do think it's I don't think it's unreasonable to expect it. It's just in the back of my head that it felt really obvious last year, and then caught us. It caught me so flat-footed that they just didn't. We think of them as such a smart organization, I guess is what I'm trying to say. And I think of myself as a relatively smart football observer. And so when the thing that feels like the smart thing isn't the thing that they do, it always kind of catches me off guard a little bit.
Yep.
I'm trying not to be as caught off guard if they're like, you know, sometime in May, Jed's our left tackle and that's all there is to it.
You have to give them credit, though. They've course corrected. They'll never say it outwardly, but they admitted they screwed this up offensively.
You're absolutely right.
They've totally, like, the mistake that we made as analysis here, they have self-accepted that we made a mistake in running it back with our thought process, our guys.
Totally.
And moved on from all of them. Yes. So,
agreed. So I hope that the reflection of that extends to the way they implement the personnel within the new offense. So I know we're off track here, but I just think it's an interesting piece of this is how flexible are they at their core? And I think it's so hard to judge that stuff from the outside of the organization.
Right. Totally agree. All right. Last one is Field Yates puts out a mock today that has the Browns taking Trey Benson at 54. I like Trey Benson. I think you can make a logical argument that he's one of the best running backs in this class, and I would be happy to have him in the Cleveland Browns uniform. The question I have, or the statement for true and false here, is 54 is too early for the Browns to be thinking about a running back. I lean that that's true. I think that they have solved the position for this year. And like, what I'm getting at is I think that a lot of the backs that are in this class are going to be available in the next class. I don't think you need to be forcing a pick at 54 unless you think that like Trey Benson's going to transform what we do offensively here for the next 4 years. If that's your belief, that's different. I want to hear him say that. But I don't believe they're picking a running back at 54. And I actually believe if they do go about picking a running back, they're making the trade you and I talked about in the first part of this whole segment, which is moving back and adding a pick or two, maybe next year's draft, whatever. Then you're picking a running back. I just don't think sitting at 54 picking a running back, given the names you've brought in, which I think you and I agree have solved it until Nick is Nick again, whatever version of that is, it's hard to say forcing because you can love a player at 54. It's not really a forced thing, but that just feels too early for me. So I'll say, Andrew, I get the idea from guys like Field Yates or those who cover the league, all 32 teams. But for me, they have solved it. They've done well enough here. If there's a guy maybe at 85 or 156, that can make a little bit of sense taking a shot there, but I would be pretty damn surprised if they took it back at 54. So I'm saying they're not doing that. What do you think?
I agree with that. I feel like this happens every year where, and I think Field is a really smart guy with the NFL, that it feels though that it happens every year where you'll see these draft picks where it's a little bit paint by numbers, right? Where you look at the Browns as an organization, you try and think about what they don't have. And they do such a good job in free agency of filling holes specifically so they don't have to draft for need. They really want to avoid that, which honestly kind of undercuts a lot of what national media does when they make a mock draft, because the whole formula is you have your board on one side of the screen and you have your list of teams pick by pick and what their needs are. And so the fact that the Browns tend to want to get to a point where by the time they're drafting, they don't have any obvious needs where a player needs to come in and contribute right away means that it's harder to mock draft for them. So every year you see this where media members try and force a pick to the Browns and it doesn't make much sense. My jaw would drop if they drafted Trey Benson at 54. I agree with you. I like the player a lot. I like the fit for the Browns a lot, actually. But when you have two top 100 picks, we spent a fair amount of time earlier in this show talking about how weak this draft class is. The idea of spending one of those two top 100 picks on a player at running back where you've got right now on the roster, they've got five running backs that I think are NFL quality running backs. if you're including Nick Chubb. It's the room is full. There's not another word to describe that room other than full. If you put Nick on the PUP list and he misses 6 weeks, you've got four other guys right now that can carry the rock. We're good. There's no room at the inn. I like Trey Benson. I just don't see the fit, and I don't see the necessity of addressing that non-need with a top 100 pick.
I think if you get to 85 and you're like, we loved him at 54, he's still here at 85. Yeah, I'd be fine with that. You know, pick 85 is fringe top 100. I get it. Yep. But like 54 is one of the very valuable assets you've had this entire offseason. You have to maximize it. And like with a historic tackle class here playing out in front of us.
And wide receiver.
And wide receiver, you need to be pursuing because you have a better chance of a top flight guy getting there to 54 at those positions.
Yeah.
And it's like, just to me, man, let this group play out. Let Nick prove who he is again a little bit here. And then you're going to have the same type of guys available in the next draft at running back. They just kind of keep second, third, fourth round guys keep coming about in the running back world where you like kind of can do it every year if you want.
To your point, if they hit on a receiver that falls to them at 54 and they come back at 85 and Benson is still sitting there, or even if he's there at 80 and they want to make a small move up and trade away their fifth or whatever, like I'm on board, man. If they're looking at their roster saying we're changing the offensive scheme, some of the guys that have been here aren't going to be here. David Bell's probably gone. Maybe, you know, they really don't think Pierre Strong's going to stick. And there's room for two skill position players that are going to fit this offense better. Do it. I am all in favor of that. Adding young, exciting skill position players makes a ton of sense with the offensive change they're doing. But I think running back at 54 just really would kind of puzzle me. And I think the point that you make about you can find these guys every year, I think they need to do a better job of really getting aggressive with the UDFA market with running backs. I mean, they were apparently in on Keaton Mitchell last year. I don't know how they missed that one.
John Kelly lives in Strongsville. He's got great real estate. He'll be back. I'm with you, man. That's a spot. They swing it like some of these positions where, like, come on, man. Like a UDFA defensive tackle. Like, what? Come on. Like, what's the odds here? But a running back.
It happens every year.
It happens every year. So I would be hopefully we see them because they only brought in the Georgia Tech kid last year who was just a waste of time. No offense to him.
No, but they have not invested in running back depth. I think that's fair to say. The Pierre Strong trade is the exception. And obviously they drafted Jerome Ford, but I'm talking organizationally.
Yeah. Cruise control has been set since Nick and Kareem. They've been going 55 windows down and not worrying about it, but they got to worry about it now.
They're getting passed by semi trucks.
They are definitely now getting like, Dad, what's happening here? So yeah, they need to figure that out.
Why is that man honking at us?
Yeah. So we'll let them honk for one more year because we think they're fine. But then like maybe take a good swing at a good chunk of money at the UDFA market. And then if you still don't have the
practice squad for a year. Right. Yeah, exactly.
You still don't have an answer. Then you go into next year's draft with a full slate of picks with a chance to draft a guy in the second or third or whatever. So all right, that's a fun pod. We got a lot of draft topics talked about. We talked about Stephon Diggs and a lot of the moving parts there. Andrew knows I appreciate his time. I appreciate your guys' time. Rate and review on your way out, please, if you haven't done that, whether you're on Spotify or Apple Pods or wherever you find us. It continues to be the main source for helping Browns fans figure out where to find this podcast. So I appreciate you guys for doing that. And if you haven't done so, please do it. We appreciate it. Go to the OBR for all your Browns needs. We appreciate that support as well. As we always say, thanks for giving this podcast some time of day. It means a lot to us when you give us a little bit of your attention. And until we meet up again, we'll be back for a Friday podcast. Be well and go Browns.